Genesis chapter 49. We've seen in the last chapter, Jacob is getting close to death, and he knows it's coming, and so he's doing all of his, you know, last minute stuff now, blessing the children. He has Joseph come and bring his two children, Ephraim and Manasseh, in the last chapter we saw. And he brings Ephraim and Manasseh before Jacob, and Jacob blesses his grandchildren. And he gives them that, he brings them into the family, just as Reuben and Simeon were, the two oldest at that time. Brings them in just kind of at the highest place, and he blesses them, gives them a part of the land. They're now a part of those 12 tribes of Israel. And Joseph, as a result, is kind of given that double portion. It's kind of like that two-for-one sale, you know, where Joseph gets double what he would normally be getting through Ephraim and Manasseh. And so Jacob blessed those two. And now as we look into chapter 49, Jacob is going to be gathering all of his children, the 12 boys, Reuben all the way down to Benjamin. He's going to gather them together to give his final pronouncement of blessing upon their lives. But it's very exciting to see this chapter as we look through it. How many people took history in high school? How many people had to go through history? How many people barely even remember high school to know if they even took history? All right. I didn't have to take, I guess, somewhat of a bit of a history, but I never had like a full history class in high school. I always, you know, just took the bare minimum. I had like, you know, double block of construction and gym and cafeteria even. I was like really trying to just skim through and not take those heavy subjects that would cause me to be there another couple of years, I'm sure. So, didn't take history. But as we go through this chapter, guys are going to be getting a history lesson, okay? This is going to be an exciting, exciting chapter of prophecy, because as we go through this, as Jacob is going to be giving his pronouncement of blessing upon his sons, what we're going to be seeing is really the whole nation of Israel, the course that they are going to be taking right from the beginning as a nation all the way to present day, and then we're going to even be looking into what's going to be happening for the nation of Israel in the future. We're going to be seeing that all through this passage. Jacob called the sons in verse 1 and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." Those words, "in the last days," is dealing with prophecy. Whenever you hear those words, "in the last days," always dealing with prophecy. So the entire history of Israel is going to unfold for us here in this chapter. It's going to be exciting. So he says in verse 2, "Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father." I like this. Jacob refers to himself by both names, Jacob and Israel. We've seen that those were two stages in his life. There was the stage where he was born as Jacob, supplanter, heel catcher, deceiver. That's the kind of way that he was characterized by his early life. But then there was that monumental change, that moment that he met with God there at Peniel, where God wrestled with him and overcame him. Jacob finally had to surrender, and God said, "No longer is your name going to be Jacob, it's going to be Israel." Israel meant what? Ruled or governed by God. You see, there was going to be a change that would take place in Jacob's life. No longer this deceiver, no longer this guy living according to the flesh, as Jacob was a picture of, but now a guy that's ruled by God. Now, of course, there were some struggles along the way. Just as when we are born again, we are now a person that's born into the Spirit. We have the Spirit that's ruling us, but yet, it's not always easy going, is it? Man, we struggle. There's days where we're going, "How could I have done that, man? I'm living by the flesh. That's the way I used to live. Why am I doing that now?" We know that there's always going to be that struggle until we are made perfect before the Lord in heaven. And Jacob experienced that. But there were those two stages in his life, Jacob and Israel, and he refers to himself by both of those names here as he gathers his children together. Jacob knew how God had made such a change in his life. And he knew that his sons would follow either example. He knew that some of his sons would be those that would follow after the life of Jacob, living according to the flesh. But there were those sons that would live according to the nature of Israel, ruled or governed by God. He knew that the life that he led was an example before his sons, and some children would live according to that former life, and some children would be living according to his new life, marked by Israel, governed by God. Let me say this to you men, to you fathers more specifically. What legacy are you leaving behind? You future fathers, what kind of legacy will you guys be leaving behind for your children? What example do you want your kids to follow? A life lived according to self, to the flesh, or a life that says, I'm surrendered before God. I want my life ruled by the Lord. You see, the very actions have those immediate consequences before our family. The life that we are living out before our children and our family, they are noticing, they are watching, they are seeing, and they are taking and gathering that kind of example. And I know in my life, man, when I'm living for self, I'm not taking time for the kids, and I'm being consumed with me, man, what are my kids going to be seeing in that? But if I'm a guy that's saying, Lord, I just want to be surrendered to you, I want to, my life to be wrapped up in you and consumed by you, Lord, that's the kind of life I want to be living before my children, that they might see that example, that they might grow up the same way. Now, sure, I need to be praying for them and just, you know, leaving them in the Lord's hands. But I want to be leaving that legacy of a surrendered and consumed for the Lord kind of life. That's what I want to be living before my children. And Jacob here says, you know, you sons of Jacob, listen to Israel, your father. Knowing already that he's seen the consequences of the fleshly life before his children. We've seen some of his kids already mess up. But we've seen some kids just go for it. Just godly lies. Joseph in particular. Good word for you fathers there. So he says to Reuben in verse 3, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Reuben's sitting here going, that's right, guys. You getting that? Did you guys get all that? Do you hear what he said there? The excellency of dignity, the excellency of power. He was the firstborn. He was the guy who would normally receive the inheritance and the responsibility of leadership in the family. I'm sure Reuben was just getting all chest coming out like, that's right, guys. That's right, man. You better be listening to me. And then suddenly Jacob goes, you're unstable as water. You shall not excel because you went up to your father's bed. Then he defiled it. He went up to my couch. You could just see that chest inflated all of a sudden going, oh, man, shoulders slumping like, oh, man, you know. My goodness, what a turnaround here. Reuben was the firstborn. He was that guy that was, you know, at first Jacob's boy. This is my guy, my firstborn. This is the guy that's going to just kind of take over when I'm gone. But what happened? There was that time after Rachel's death, a time where Jacob was just mourning through this time. And Reuben went up to Bilhah, one of his concubines, and slept with her. A time where Jacob could have, I'm sure, come and been comforted by Bilhah. Instead, Reuben comes in and ruins that and wrecks it and adds more sorrow onto Jacob's life that he's just going through with Rachel's death. Reuben was unstable as water. You ever try to pick up water with your hand? Man, just, you can't do that. It's unstable. It's all over the place. A lot of you people at the barbecue last week know just how unstable water is. Large water fight. Brandon and Jeremy, there are still some consequences to pay. And he said to Reuben, you will not excel. You will not excel. You know, there are many today who are not excelling as Christians. They're not being all that they can be. Why? Because they've allowed sin to come in and hamper them. They've allowed sin to creep in, sometimes just very subtly, but they've allowed sin to get in. They've not repented of it. And that sin has hampered them. And so though in their minds they're saying, Lord, I want to serve you, there's a sin that they have not dealt with, that they've not repented and confessed before the Lord and gotten rid of. And they're not excelling as a result. It's what happened with the tribe of Reuben in time. He did not excel. They were insignificant. They were just kind of a, you know, insignificant tribe. Why? Because of their instability. And as believers today, Boy, I pray that we would be Christians who are excelling, that we are going for it. How do we do that? Well, you know, we get into the Word. We pray. We surrender our lives before the Lord and say, God, just fill me with all that you have. I don't want to serve all the things in this world. I don't want to seek after these things that are not of you. Those things are just unstable. They're not going to get me anywhere. And when I allow those things to kind of come into my life and to get a foothold, I suddenly realize that it is hindering. It hampers me, and I'm not able to excel. When you see runners in the Olympic events, when they're running, man, you see those outfits they're wearing nowadays. They're like just skin tight. They just want nothing to hinder them. Guys are shaving their heads, man, because that hair is going to shave off a second or two. You know what I'm saying? They want everything just gone, gotten rid of, so that they can excel. They can go as far as they can go. And as a believer, that's what we need to do. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us that. To throw off all those things that hinder and entangle us. That you might run that race, man. That you might just go for it. And I pray that we'd be Christians that excel. You've already heard my my past in school, where I was just not really excelling. I was just trying to get by, you know. Just give me that diploma and I'm happy. But as a Christian, man, I want to get all that the Lord has for me. And get rid of all that junk that weighs me down. And I have to struggle with that. Maybe some of you have to really struggle with that. But we know that when we are getting into the Word and prayer and just seeking the Lord, man, that thing begins to outweigh all that junk and it begin to get rid of it, wash it away. I pray that we'd be those that excel. Now, as I said, this chapter is really going to be dealing with prophecy and the whole history and future of Israel. Well, this prophecy shows how the nation of Israel was chosen to have the special placement in the plan of God, weren't they? They were God's special people. The Hebrew people, this was God's guys. They were going to be this mighty nation. God had wonderful things in store for them. Yet, soon after they were sent out as a nation, they were gathered in Egypt, as we're seeing this unfolding here now. The 12 tribes are here in Egypt. God's going to bring them there so that they can grow strong and mighty, that they can, you know, be free from all the sin around them, because the Egyptians didn't want anything to do with them. It was there that they could grow as a nation, then God at the right time would bring them out of Egypt, led by Moses, to be this mighty nation for God. But what happened? They came out of the wilderness, or they came out of Egypt. They were walking through the wilderness. They began to complain. They began to grumble. All we're getting is manna all day. We want more. You know, and all these things. And they were beginning to complain and grumble. And then, soon, while Moses was up on the mountain, what happened? These guys said, hey, let's make a god. Let's make an idol that we can worship to. Something that we can see. So they began to design that golden calf that they began to worship. They became unstable. The nation of Israel. What did Reuben do? He committed adultery, really. He went up to his father's concubine. He really betrayed his father. The nation of Israel, they betrayed their God because they went after other idols. They began to worship other gods. They committed adultery, spiritual adultery. Just as Reuben did. And this was kind of the start of this nation of Israel as they were led out. Well, let's move on. In verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man. And in their self-will, they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Simeon and Levi were singled out together because of the horrendous crime that they also committed together while in Shechem. Remember that back in chapter 34? When Dinah, their sister, was raped by Shechem. And these two brothers, they were angry. They were upset. And Jacob says it was in their anger that they slew a man. You know, we need to be careful of anger, don't we? I don't think it's wrong to get upset, to get angry. But it's wrong what that anger can oftentimes produce. The actions, the results of that anger. Man, we need to get a grip on that sometimes. Because it was in their anger that they went out and slew a man. They were upset. But as Jacob says, they became instruments of cruelty. Can you imagine having that label on you? Instruments of cruelty. Wow, that's heavy. You know, Simeon and Levi, I'm sure, were sitting there going, you know, Dad, you got any other kind of blessing for us? You know, maybe something else? That one's a little bit heavy there, Dad. You know? What else you got in that bag there of yours? I mean, this was a strong word towards them, but it was true. They went out and sinned. And they took down that whole town. It was a wicked act. And as a result of that anger, now, it says that they would be divided, Jacob says. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. They would be scattered. Now, in God's grace, Levi became the priestly tribe. I mean, think about that. Instruments of cruelty, yet God used them to be the instruments that would be working in and around the tabernacle. The priestly tribe. Wow. Think about that. I mean, I think about that and I go, wow. But you know what? It's really no difference with me. You know? Here I was before I came to the Lord. Man, I was no better. I was born a sinner. Man, I was doing things that were wrong. That just came naturally. And yet God brought me out of that into His wonderful family by His grace. That now I can stand and share His word. Man, it's an awesome honor. And for you, you guys were no better. Yeah, don't sit there and go, yeah, Brent, you really were bad. You were no better. You were born in sin. But God, by His grace, brought you out of that to be a royal priesthood, to be those that would go and share the gospel in this world. You have as much responsibility as I do. And I think, wow, Lord, how could you do that? That's incredible. Your grace is so awesome. And He did that with the priestly tribe here for Levi, but as a result, they would be scattered, and the same with Simeon. They were just going to kind of be scattered out there. Now, continuing on in the chronological history of Israel, that's what we're going to be looking at here. Chronologically looking through this timeline of Israel, we know that all prophecy is really dealing with Israel. And remember in Daniel chapter, somebody help me, chapter 9, is it? The 12, is it the 12 weeks? Not the 12 weeks. Oh man, I messed up now. Anyways, the 70 weeks, thank you. Clark, you're just sitting here watching me just fight, because he knows it all. He's just sitting there going, yeah, I'll just let him fight through this here. The 70 weeks prophesied, and it was given to the people of God, the nation of Israel. So we know the prophetic clock that's ticking is dealing with the nation of Israel. We're going to be seeing that here. Now, the next thing in line here that comes after these people have committed adultery against God, they've begun to sin and follow after other idols. What significant event would take place after they continued on doing this? They would be dispersed. They'd be led away into captivity. Two separate captivities, actually. Notice how Jacob is speaking of two sons here? There were going to be two separate captivities. First of all, the Assyrian captivity that took place fully in 722 BC. The northern tribes there, Samaria, sacked, and they were taken away into Syria. And then later on in 586 BC, there was the Babylonian captivity, and Jerusalem was captured. Two separate captivities. You see, they were dispersed. They were scattered, taken out of their land. And what's Jacob saying to Simeon and Levi? I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. They were led away in captivity. And then we come to Judah, the fourth born son. And he says, Judah, you are he whom your brother shall praise. Interesting. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes. And to him shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk. Wow. Now that's a blessing. Judah, given this great blessing, yet Judah, you know, he didn't always start off that great. Remember, there's the incident in chapter 38. Judah and Tamar. He was not a very honest guy at that time. Yet God had a special plan. And we began to see in the life of Joseph the events that took place, that Judah began to kind of rise to the occasion. In fact, culminating in the place where he was giving his life in place of Benjamin, saying, let me be a substitute. Take my life. But don't harm Benjamin. Interesting. Judah indeed became one who exemplified leadership and godliness. His name meant praise. Remember when his name was given, Judah? It was because Leah was just, you know, saying, I'm going to praise God. Not going to be worried about trying to get Jacob's attention, man. I'm just going to praise God now. His name meant praise, and he would be one whom his brothers would praise. The tribe of Judah would be one who would produce some significant kings. David was from this line. The greatest king in Israel, David. And people would begin to praise him. Now this prophecy that Jacob is given to Judah speaks of one who would come and be a deliverer to the nation of Israel. Interesting. Now it says the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes. From David to the Herods, right up until Jesus' day, one from Judah would continue in a ruling position over Israel. However, as the Romans began to occupy the land and exercise their authority there in Israel, what happened? They took away Israel's right of executing capital punishment. That happened around 7 AD. The Romans came in and began to just, you know, exercise their authority and say, you know what, you guys no longer have the right to execute capital punishment, the death penalty. It's taken from you. Remember when Jesus was taken before Pilate, and Pilate just says, do with them as you please. And the Jews said, no, we cannot. It is not lawful for us to, you know, give the death penalty. It's taken from us. Now what had happened in around 7 AD, when the death penalty was taken from them, the Jews began to go through the streets, and they were mourning and covering themselves in sackcloth and ashes. And they're crying out, woe unto us, for the scepter has been taken from Judah, and Shiloh has not come. You see, what they thought was that the word was being broken. You see, even the Jews held to this passage, that the scepter shall not be taken until Shiloh comes. Who is Shiloh? It's speaking of Jesus Christ. We'll get into that in a little bit. And so the Jews began to mourn, thinking, oh, the Messiah has not come. The word's been broken. It's not coming to existence. Little did they know. At the present time, there was a young lad who was growing up and was the very fulfillment of this prophecy right before them. In fact, Jesus could have been 12 years old. Some believe that it was at the time where he was there teaching in the temple at 12 years old, just confounding, astonishing the priest there. Believing that at the very day that this was taken from them, Jesus was there in the temple. I don't know if that's true or not. It's something interesting to think about. But nevertheless, Jesus was born. He was there in the land, the fulfillment of this prophecy. Shiloh means peace is sent. Interesting. Peace is sent. Speaks of Christ, the Prince of Peace, sent to this world to be the one to take this scepter. You see, Christ is going to reign, isn't he? Christ will reign. How will this be accomplished? Well, Jesus is going to come riding in on a donkey, allowing himself to be proclaimed as the Messiah. He will give his life on the cross. And through his blood, will pay the price for our redemption. What did we read in this? Verse 11, binding his donkey to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. That's how Jesus came in, being proclaimed as the Messiah. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. It says in the end of verse 11, he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine and his teeth whiter than milk. Speaks of this washing in the blood, being made white because of Christ's sacrifice. Though our clothes were stained and tainted, we've been made white as snow because of his sacrifice, because Shiloh has come, given his life on a cross. You see, that was the next step in Israel's history. They sinned, they rebelled, they were led astray, they were divided and scattered because of their captivity. But Christ came, the Messiah. Well, it's going to just get a little bit more interesting here. Let's continue on. Verse 13. Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships. Now, Jacob is not going in order. He has been going from Reuben to Jacob, or to Judah. But now, the sons are going to be a little bit placed in different order according to their age. They're not going to be in age here, but it's going to flow very nicely with the prophecies that are going to be given. It's interesting. Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. Zebulun would occupy the land up north between the Sea of Galilee and the Mediterranean Sea. They would occupy that whole land. So they were those, that tribe that would dwell by the haven of the sea. They'd have, you know, the Sea of Galilee on that border and the Mediterranean on this border. So easy access by ships and all. Now, after Christ came, what happened? The nation of Israel did not believe him to be the Messiah. They rejected him. In fact, in 70 AD, the Romans came and sacked Jerusalem and drove the Jews away. This prophecy speaks of Israel being in exile, literally being shipped out. That's the connection with the ships here. They were literally shipped out. They were scattered. They were dispersed again. And they began to occupy other places. That's what happened with the nation of Israel, because of the rejection of Jesus. And Issachar in verse 14. Issachar is a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. Issachar. Issachar would also dwell in the northern region of Israel and would enjoy some very fruitful land. It was in the area called the Valley of Megiddo. Very fertile soil. And they could just kind of go out and scatter their seeds and crops would just grow. Man, it was a blessing. It required little work, yet they prospered greatly there. It says that he saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. They just kind of became somewhat lazy. They didn't have to do a lot of work. They didn't have to, you know, really labor after the ground there and to produce crops. I mean, it was just easy going. Boy. And he bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. Now, as the Jews were exiled, let's look back into prophecy here. As the Jews were exiled, they found themselves oftentimes between two burdens, in unfamiliar and unpleasant places, didn't they? Yet what happened? They became very prosperous. So much so that it resulted in their persecution. They became a band of slaves and went through torturous trials. Just think of, you know, Nazi Germany and the concentration camps that they had to go through. Numerous other examples like that. They found themselves in unfamiliar and unpleasant places, yet they prospered, just as Issachar did here. Man, the land was good. They began to prosper. But people began to get upset with them. Go look at these people, these Jews. prospering, getting rich here in our land. Well, we've got to stop this. They found themselves between two burdens and became a band of slaves. And to this day, they are suffering and bearing a burden still. Bearing a burden for the rejection of the Messiah. But thankfully, God's not done with them. And we will see that as we continue on. Dan, verse 16, shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path, that bites the horse's heel so that its rider shall fall backward. Dan will indeed produce an important judge. Samson came from the tribe of Dan. But they will also be a poisonous tribe. In fact, the tribe of Dan were the ones that really introduced idol worship to Israel. Jeroboam set up a golden calf in Dan for worship. 1 Kings chapter 12 tells us that. And later, Dan became a center of idol worship in Israel. Amos chapter 8, verse 14 shows us that. And it says that they will be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path. So he introduces this idol worship and how it just polluted the people even more so. Now, in the course of Israel's history, we begin now to move into the future. Present day, we see them at Issachar, don't we? They're kind of scattered. They're being blessed in a lot of ways, but they're carrying a heavy burden as well. That's what the word was for Issachar. That's where we see Israel present day. Now we're going to kind of begin to skip into the future a little bit here. What's going to be awaiting this nation of Israel? Well, we see with Dan here that he shall be a serpent by the way. Who else was described as a serpent in the Bible? In Genesis. Genesis 3, I think it was. Satan. When he came to Eve in the garden, it was a serpent that came. And there is going to be another serpent who will come as a false Messiah. But he will be an enemy of Israel and an enemy of God. He's known as the Antichrist. And many believe that the Antichrist is going to be coming from this tribe of Dan. In fact, even many of the great rabbis today believe that from the tribe of Dan there is going to be a false Messiah that is going to come one day. Many rabbis believe that. And so, many people believe that the Antichrist is going to come from this tribe, a serpent by the way. And many believe, or we know in the Word, that he is going to lead the people of Israel in deception. He's going to lead them in deception. He's going to say, oh, look it, I'm rebuilding the temple. Everything's going to be great. There's going to be that peace treaty that's going to be made. People are going to be following this guy going, look at how wonderful everything's changing here. And when I was there in Israel last year, I remember asking some of the people that are studying in some of the schools, some of the you know, real devout Jews. I said, you know, how will you know when the person comes onto the scene that he is the Messiah that you're waiting for? How will you know? He said, it's going to lead us in the rebuilding of our temple. That's going to be the one mark that's really going to identify this guy as the, in their minds, as the Messiah. Well, that's what the Antichrist is going to do. He's going to come and he's going to sign that peace treaty for 7 years. Everything's going to be just wonderful. Oh, the Jews are going to be going, all right, the temple's being rebuilt. Right now they have all the furnishings for the temple ready to go. We went to the Temple Institute. That was amazing. It blew my mind to see everything that they had in the Old Testament. They've got all these articles made now, ready to just, when the temple's built, it's ready to go. Boom. They can just move everything in. It's amazing to see these things. Wow, it's incredible. The Jews are waiting. They know what's coming. And the Antichrist is going to do this. He's going to deceive them. And they're going to be just following this guy like he's the Messiah that they've been waiting for. But, as the Word says in verse 17, he's a viper by the path that bites the horse's heel so that its rider shall fall backward. You see, partway through that tribulation when this is all taking place, 3.5 years, that peace treaty is going to be broken. The Antichrist is actually going to go up into the temple and seek to be worshipped himself. That abomination of desolation. Jesus says, when that happens, flee, guys. We're already going to be gone in heaven. But to the Jews, he says, flee. Get out of there. Run. It's going to happen when he's going to lash out and bite their heels. It's going to be unsuspecting. And they're going to be bucked off. They will see him for who he really is, a poisonous snake against them. And what are they going to soon discover? That Jesus is the Messiah. And they're going to cry out, oh, we waited for your salvation, oh God. We missed it the first time. We don't want to miss it the second time. We've been waiting for your salvation, just as Jacob says. I think that was a wonderful word for Jacob too. As he was at this time, getting back to what's happening here, Jacob's going through these blessings. And for some of them, it's pretty heavy. And he's on his deathbed, and he just kind of cries out, oh Lord, I've waited for your salvation, oh God. Boy, I'm ready to go. I'm tired. These kids, man, some of these kids have been real heavy. But I've waited for your salvation, oh Lord. But for Israel, when the Antichrist comes and strikes out against them, they're going to have their eyes open and recognize that Jesus Christ was the one true Messiah. And they're going to cry out for him again. Verse 19, Gad, a troop shall tramp upon him, but he shall triumph at last. Gad was situated in the east and was very vulnerable to invading armies. They were kind of, you know, sitting ducks at times, very vulnerable. A troop shall tramp upon him. But, little side note, he shall triumph at last. Remember Gad's name when he was born? They were saying, oh boy, I have this troop now, I have all these children, oh, troop comes. Well, now that prophecy here, a troop shall tramp upon him. When the Antichrist reveals his true nature, as I said, he's going to lash out against Israel. They will be persecuted. And he's eventually going to gather all the world's armies together to come against Israel, known as the Battle of Armageddon. But, as we see in that little side note, he shall triumph at last. God is not done with Israel. When they run from the Antichrist, when they flee, they are going to be heavily persecuted. Those are going to be 3.5 years of a difficulty such as they'd never seen before. And the Antichrist is going to be trying to just annihilate them. But what are we going to see here? Well, bread from Asher shall be rich, and he shall yield royal dainties. Asher's descendants would be the baking specialists in Israel. They're going to be the baking tribe. If I was in Israel, I'd be hanging out a lot with the tribe of Asher. Boy, I tell you, I'd be looking for my wife there with the tribe of Asher. This baking tribe, oh, it'd be good. You know, I'd be staying away from the Weight Watchers tribe. I'd just be, forget about that, man. I'm with Asher here. And they provided for the people a lot of this fanciful delicacies. Asher shall be rich. During the tribulation, as the nation of Israel, as we've seen, has turned from the Antichrist back to God, they're going to be persecuted. But guess what? Things are just going to be rich for them. You see, God is going to protect them and provide for them. There are going to be wonderful outpourings from heaven upon this nation of Israel. They are going to experience many miracles through that time. And it's just going to be rich for them. Just as this tribe of Asher provided food for much of the people of Israel, God is going to provide for the nation of Israel in this troublesome time. Jacob's trouble, the word calls it. And they are going to be provided for by the Lord. Naphtali is a deer let loose. He uses beautiful words. The tribe of Naphtali were the poets and speech specialists. Now, they were located by the Sea of Galilee also. Interesting that this is the place where Jesus did most of his ministry and taught also with beautiful words, words of truth and words of good news. And Naphtali, they were the people that had just these beautiful words spoken. But Jacob says, you're going to be a deer let loose. Using beautiful words. The people of Israel are going to experience a major revival in the last days, and are also going to begin to proclaim the gospel of Christ. They are going to be just so dear to God and to the people there that are crying out to God. You see, the good news is going to be preached. Revelation 7 speaks of the sealed of Israel who are going to be saved, and they are going to go out and just evangelize the world. It's going to be like, you know, thousands of Billy Grahams just getting out there. They're going to be let loose, Jacob says. Naphtali, your deer, let loose. And that's how it's going to be in the tribulation. Some say that there are just going to be more saved in the tribulation than all of history together. There is going to be a mighty revival. It's going to take place because God has this remnant that is marked, that in the proper time, they are just going to be let loose and they are going to go for it through the world and evangelize. And there are going to be those that are going to hear these beautiful words. It's going to be so dear to them, and they are going to be saved. It's going to be a mighty outpouring of God's blessing there in that day. See, God has a wonderful plan for Israel. God has a wonderful and great plan for them. He's not through with them yet. Now Jacob turns to Joseph. It says in verse 22, Joseph is a fruitful bough, a branch. A fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. But his bough remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors, up to my utmost bound of the everlasting hills, or up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who is separate from his brothers. Joseph, he says, you're going to be fruitful. We've already seen that, haven't we? Interesting. Joseph was fruitful. He was fruitful when he was sold as a slave in a Potiphar's house. He became very fruitful. He was fruitful there in the prison cell. And as he was brought before Pharaoh, he also was fruitful. Made prime minister of the land. This guy led a fruitful life. Though the archers bitterly grieved him and shot at him, they hated him. Joseph's brothers, they hated this guy. They were jealous of him. They couldn't stand him. And so they shot those arrows at him. They wanted to kill him. They eventually compromised and said, we're going to sell you off as a slave. But they wanted to get rid of this guy. Yet Joseph, what happened? His bow remained strong. His bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands remained strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. What does that imply? Joseph didn't shoot back. He was made strong in the Lord. He didn't sit there and say, I've got to retaliate. I've got to get retribution. That's not fair. It's like 11 against 1 or 10 against 1. I've got to do something. I don't think Benjamin was in the picture. 10 against 1. And Joseph said, no, I'm not going to retaliate. His bow was made strong. Yet for me, man, I think, how many times things come against me, people come against me, sometimes unfairly, and I'm just quick to shoot back. Hold on, what are you doing? You know? And soon I got this bow that's just kind of like withered and just limp and hanging there because I've used it so much, you know? But Joseph's bow remained strong. He didn't shoot back. Why? He found strength in the Lord. God was there with him, strengthening him, leading him, taking him through. What was really the secret of Joseph's strength? Why was he able to remain fruitful through all these arrows coming at him, through his brothers attacking him, through Potiphar's wife falsely accusing him? How was he able to remain strong? Well, it says what? He was a fruitful bough in verse 22 by a well. He was by a well. Interesting. He was by the well receiving water and nourishment. The word is oftentimes, you know, a picture of, or water is oftentimes a picture for the word. Turn with me to Psalm chapter 1. Psalm chapter 1, verse 1, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, in the word, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. Boy, that really speaks of Joseph, doesn't it? He took delight in the word, water being a picture of the word. And he was then like that tree, as the psalmist says, planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in season. Whatever he does shall prosper. That's Joseph. Whatever he did, wherever he was fruitful. He prospered. Why? Because he was by the well. He was abiding in the Lord. John 15:4. Jesus says, what does he say? Abide in me, and I in you. As a branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. Abide in me, and I in you. And then your branch is going to bear much fruit. But we've got to be like Joseph, who is that branch by the well, getting nourished, getting fed, getting our strength from the Lord. And when we do that, gang, we are going to be blessed. We are going to prosper. We are going to be fruitful. I want nothing more for my life, for your lives, to go out into this world and to be fruitful, to bear much fruit for the Lord, for His kingdom. And we can't do that unless we are being close to the Lord, unless we're getting into His Word, unless we're abiding with Him. Man, when you're going through your difficulties in life that you're going to encounter, don't let those things pull you further from the vine, but instead let them cause you to hold on even stronger to the vine. Don't let them separate you from the Lord, but let them make you find security more so in the Lord. And it's there that you will be made fruitful, that you will grow and be a blessing. Jacob gave this wonderful blessing to Joseph. Well, let's continue on to verse 27. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Interesting. Benjamin would become a small but a strong tribe. Saul, the first king of Israel, he was quite a ravenous wolf. He came from the tribe of Benjamin. Paul also was from the tribe of Benjamin, and he at first was pretty ravenous, wasn't he? But he became a man of God and continued on being pretty ravenous, but in a good way, didn't he? These two guys came from the tribe of Benjamin. They were small. Remember when Saul, when he was chosen to be king, he said, I'm just from the tribe of Benjamin. We're just small. We're insignificant. Why me? Well, this prophecy here highlights Israel's final triumph over their enemies. We've seen so far, we didn't even get to Joseph. And really the prophecy there. Well, Joseph, of course, is that picture of Jesus we've seen throughout his story already. Joseph is a real type and picture of Jesus. Well, as we see this blessing now, what is that speaking of? It's speaking of the second coming of Christ. We are at the tribulation. The Antichrist has turned on the nation of Israel. Israel is being provided and protected by the Lord. They're out preaching the gospel. What's going to come next? Jesus is going to come next. And He is going to come back down with all of us, the saints, at His side. And He is there where the battle of Armageddon is unfolding. He is there going to come and really devour those enemies. And Israel is going to be brought alongside Him. Well, we're getting into that with Benjamin now. The prophecy of Benjamin highlights Israel's final triumph. There have been many who have preyed upon Israel. They've come out and lashed out against them at times. You just look at the papers today and you see the hostility towards the nation of Israel. It's widespread. What is that? It's supernatural. It's not just, you know, normal when just a small little nation like this consumes the thoughts of all the nations around. I mean, this is a supernatural thing where people are just consumed and angry and hostile towards Israel. But God is going to come. Jesus is going to come again with us at his side. And the nation of Israel is going to overcome his enemies that are coming to attack Israel there at the Battle of Armageddon. Christ is going to come and bring the deliverance. And Israel is going to overcome their enemies. And they're going to be given that special placement there in the millennium. That's what's going to unfold after that tribulation. Christ's 1,000-year reign on earth. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be exciting, guys. But Israel is going to be given that special placement because it says in verse 27, "And at night he shall divide the spoil." Shall divide the spoil. They are going to be given that special placement. We saw that, didn't we, in chapter 47. That picture of the famine of the millennial reign of Christ, when everything's going to be gathered under Christ. And Israel is going to be given that special placement. Just as when they went into Egypt, they were given the choice part of the land there, Goshen. It's going to be what's going to happen for Israel. They've been beat up. They've been persecuted. They've been burdened down all through history. You know, it's a small price to pay for the rejection of the Messiah, but God is going to deal with them again and show them mercy and kindness. And once again, they're going to be given that special place, special allotment. It's going to be a wonderful thing. Well, interesting outline of the course of Israel. If you got any questions about that, guys, come and talk to me afterwards. Let's discuss it a little bit more. If there's things that just weren't sitting right or fitting for you and you're confused about something, come and talk to me about that afterwards. Well, let's continue on to verse 28. "All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them. And he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. Then he charged them and said to them, 'I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. And when Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people." Now notice in verse 31, it speaks of this cave that Abraham had bought. We covered that earlier on in Genesis. This cave that Abraham had bought. And there in that cave was Abraham and Sarah buried, Isaac and Rebekah, and Jacob also buried Leah. Leah. Why Leah? I mean, Rachel was the one that Jacob loved, that he wanted to be with. Rachel died on their journey down from there in Paddan Aram, and she was buried near Bethlehem. But yet Leah is buried here in this cave. Leah. Interesting. Now, the question is, was this God's will for Jacob to marry her? You see, Leah was the one that brought Judah into the world. And Jesus is going to come from the tribe of Judah. Notice it's interesting, I didn't even comment on this, but going back in chapter or verse 9 there, what we've already covered, Jacob's blessing upon Judah, he says, Judah is a lion's whelp, and Jesus we will see the line of the tribe of Judah. Interesting. And so Leah was the one that gave birth to Judah, who would in turn be the one that Jesus would come from that line. Was this the one that God wanted Jacob to marry? You see, this is the one that would ultimately really bring Jacob closer to Christ. And yet he was wanting Rachel. She was a pretty one. Leah had the weak eyes. You know, I think it meant that she was just hard on the eyes to look at. I don't know. She wasn't, you know, as pretty as Rachel, and Jacob wanted no part of her. But was this the one that God had for Jacob? Because it's interesting that this is the one that Jacob is going to be laid down next to in his death, where he's going to be gathered to his people. Just food for thought, guys, okay? Think about it. If you've got anything else you want to add to that, come and talk to me afterwards about that. But Jacob put his feet up in the bed. I like that. Just kind of said, guys, it's time to go. Time for me to be gathered to my people. Not just to be kind of dead and that's it. But there was something waiting for him. I'm going to be gathered to my people. There in Abraham's bosom, Jacob knew that this was not the end. And we've talked about this already before. But he put his feet up in his bed in peace and just said, it's time. I like that. Just letting go. He was there in Egypt in luxury. Yet he said, man, this isn't what I'm living for. I'm living for something greater. So he put his feet up and said, I'm moving on. I'm moving on to something even greater. Wow, what a life. He was ready to pass on and be gathered to his people. He knew that death was not the end. And for the believer, death is really just the beginning, isn't it? That's how we need to look at it. Boy, I talk to people who are afraid of death. I talk to people who don't want to die because life is just so good. Man, they're missing out. Because death for the believer is just the beginning. We're just moving on to better and bigger and greater things. A man was having to move his business into a bigger warehouse. His business was growing and he was prospering. He said, I got to move in a bigger place. Well, time came for the grand opening and a friend of his sent him some flowers. And on those flowers were a note that said, my deepest sympathy during this time of sorrow. And the guy read this note and said, time of sorrow, man, things have never been better. What's this guy talking about? So he calls his friend, and his friend says, oh man, the florist got mixed up. So his friend goes and calls the florist and says, what's going on here? I sent, you know, these flowers to my friend's grand opening with a note, and it got all mixed up. And the florist says, I'm terribly sorry about the mix-up. I hope you'll be understanding, but you got to understand your situation is not half as bad as the one down at the funeral home. The folks there received your flowers accompanied by the card which said, best wishes in your new location. And that's kind of about it for the believer. When we die, it's just, hey, you're going on to a new location, a better one. That's going to far outpass anything that you've experienced in this lifetime. It's just going to be better. And that's the kind of faith that Jacob died with. That's the legacy he left behind. It's a good one, isn't it? Had a lot of bumps on the road. Had a rough beginning. It's not how you start in life. It's how you finish, isn't it? And he finished a man full of faith, ready to move on and be with God. That's what I'm waiting for.